Kristen Fisher from the University of Maryland. Welcome.
Well, good afternoon, and I have to say I'm very pleased to have the attendance that's here. You've exceeded my hopes and expectations, and I guess I should have known the redox scientists would hang in here till the end, so thank you very much for being here. I'm going to be talking about some work that started out as a soil fertility project and really was mixed with soil chemistry, and the results I'm going to be showing you, I've really pulled a lot from food chemistry to try to explain them, so I'm very interested in your feedback, and I hope that you won't be shy at the end of the talk if you see some trends that I'm not acknowledging here. So first, by way of some background, this study is looking at urea hydrolysis in soils, and urea is a common type of nitrogen. It's a natural metabolic waste product of many organisms, both terrestrial and aquatic, and it's also the most popular form of nitrogen fertilizer in the world. It's hydrolyzed to ammonium by the enzyme urease, and the activity of that enzyme varies in soil to some degree. Its activity and the rate at which urea is hydrolyzed is influenced by many factors depending on what papers you look at. But in our work, soil carbon and nitrogen, the components of organic matter, were continuously pointing at a way of explaining why soils at the same pH and soils that looked similar otherwise could have different rates of hydrolysis. But we were only looking at total carbon, and we were interested in looking at some specific organic acids to see how different fractions of carbon might affect urea hydrolysis. And I should say the background is because you may have heard there's some concern among the estuarine science community that urea is coming off of agricultural landscapes and getting into surface waters and changing the composition and possibly the toxicity of the algal blooms that are developing. So that's the background to the study. So individual components of organic carbon have been found to stimulate urea hydrolysis, microbial activity, microbial respiration, and biomass to different degrees, depending on what source you look at. And this is a paper that looked at these five different phenolic compounds over a 3, 6, and 9 day incubation. And you can see that each one stimulated, in this case, this is urease activity, slightly differently. In our study, so we were going to follow that sort of trend and look at some individual carbon compounds in our work, which took place in Maryland. And the star on the right-hand figure is where we did soil sampling, and this is on the coastal plain region, the eastern shore of Maryland. It's adjacent to the Chesapeake Bay. And this is a close-up of that landscape. We had transects that went across this landscape and had points of sampling in agricultural fields, in the grass field border and also in the riparian zone from A and B horizons. And for this work, we compared the ag field and the riparian zone soils because they were the most different in terms of carbon composition and pH. So our study design looked at four types of carbon, ascorbic, gallic, benzoic, and cinnamic acids. We had the two locations, the ag field and the riparian zone, two horizons, A and B, three replicates of everything. And we did 24-hour incubations at room temperature, where we added 100 milligrams of urea nitrogen per kilogram of soil in a background of 1/100th molar calcium chloride and one of the carbon concentrations listed in the table. Cinnamic acid is only somewhat soluble, which is why the higher concentrations of this treatment, we didn't have those. And I should say this range of treatments covers a range of soluble carbon that has been reported in the literature. So we wanted to also look at where the threshold was for any effects that we saw, because many studies have looked at a single concentration in their work. Also, ascorbic and gallic acids are redox active, they're reducing agents, they're good metal chelators. They had similar effects on urea hydrolysis, so I'm only going to show gallic acid results in this presentation. Benzoic and cinnamic acid are metabolized by soil microbes, and they also had results that were similar to each other, so I will be showing benzoic acid results in this presentation. The first thing I want to point out, bring your attention to, is the difference redox activities of these carbon compounds. We have PEPH diagrams here where with gallic acid on the left and benzoic acid on the right. And, of course, PEPH diagrams are going to tell us about the electron activity in a treatment and whether we've got reducing or oxidizing conditions. The blue and red lines are thermodynamic predictions of the equilibrium position of the reduced versus the oxidized form of each metal. So above the respective line, you're going to have more oxidized form of that metal. Below the line, you're going to have more reduced forms of that metal. And so the important takeaway message here is that you'll see there's a group of treatments highlighted for gallic acid that fall below the iron line, which shows that there's reduced iron in solution. And that's important for the story that I'll be telling. So, you know, the take-home message here is gallic acid in some of the treatments had iron reduced, and so iron 2 was present. This is the first graph. All the graphs are set up the same, so I'm going to orient you to what you're looking at, and then it should all make sense in future slides. This is the gallic acid effects in A-horizon soils from the agricultural field. On the left y-axis, you have the amount of urea nitrogen that was hydrolyzed relative to the control, and it corresponds to the bars on the graph. So anything that's above the zero line, the horizontal zero line, is an enhancement in urea hydrolysis. Anything that falls below that zero line is an inhibition or a reduction in urea hydrolysis relative to what the control soil did. The middle treatment here has a cross next to it, a cross symbol that is not different from the control, so anytime you see that, that's what that means. And I'm going to have graphs, multiple graphs on a slide, and so the letters are specific to each graph. They're not meant to be compared between graphs. So here you can see, and on the right-hand side, I should say, the right y-axis is soluble metals, and we have aluminum, manganese, and iron data. So here we have increasing concentrations of gallic acid, which didn't give us a linear increase or really a linear relationship in the amount of urea that was hydrolyzed. More carbon didn't equal more urea hydrolysis. There's this dip in the middle that seemed a little strange. It wasn't what we expected. But here we have that same graph on the left, but I've added the riparian zone A-horizon soil on the right. You can see that both horizons had that similar pattern where you had an enhancement at low concentrations of added carbon, not necessarily an inhibition, but the middle range was not different from the control, and then enhancement again at the higher concentrations of carbon. And these concentration-dependent effects have been seen by others, and so this is where the food chemistry is going to be pulled in. The authors of this paper were looking at hydroxyl-dependent damage to deoxyribose on the left-hand graph and DNA damage on the right-hand graph. And these graphs show gallic acid and ascorbic acid, but I've circled the ranges of gallic acid in which these types of damage peaked. So at low concentrations, as you increase the concentration of gallic acid, you increase damage to carbohydrates and DNA. And then at a certain threshold, that effect reversed, and there was a reduced amount of damage with higher and higher concentrations of gallic acid. And so these authors attributed this to Fenton reaction chemistry. And what happens with Fenton reactions is that you have reduced iron in solution. It interacts, it reacts with hydrogen peroxide, that's the byproduct of aerobic respiration. As a result of that interaction, you have iron become oxidized, and a hydroxyl radical is formed. And that's the thing that causes damage, is the hydroxyl radical. What happens when you have a reducing agent like gallic acid present is the gallic acid will re-reduce the iron 3 back to iron 2 and keep this Fenton loop in a continuous cycle. And so the authors are indicating that this is a problem up to a certain threshold, and after that, the beneficial effects of gallic acid, in which it can scavenge free radicals, actually overwhelms the damage, and you have beneficial effects kicking in at the higher and higher concentrations of gallic acid, so you see the reduced damage. So the concentrations of carbon here that are circled are very close, equivalent to this middle range of carbon where we saw no difference from the control. And so what we think is that we have some of this Fenton reaction chemistry happening in our treatments as well. And of course, Fenton reactions are going to be dependent on the amount of iron that's in solution. So at low concentrations, there's little or no iron in solution. You have some beneficial effects from the carbon being there, and that may be different types of metal chelation. It might be a heterotrophic carbon source. But then when iron starts to come into solution, these Fenton reactions kick in. There's damage to microbial membranes, possibly. You have a reduction in the activity compared to the other treatments. And then once you get past that threshold, gallic acid is compensating for the Fenton reaction chemistry and maybe is also chelating metals and providing other benefits. What's interesting is that the B horizon soils, those were all A horizon soils, the B horizon soils are almost a mirror image of the A horizon soils. And so this was a little bit of a brain teaser, but the B horizons are much lower in native carbon, and so they also tend to, what the urease activity that's there tends to be extracellular urease, not associated with live microbial communities. And extracellular urease can be stabilized against degradation when they complex with soil colloids. So it may be that the thing that's acting in urea hydrolysis here is not as affected by the Fenton reaction chemistry, or that the iron isn't at a concentration that begins that reaction. And possibly it's providing carbon to a starved community, and so that there's some urealytic microbial growth taking place. At the higher concentrations, it starts to drop off. We were getting into some low pHs, and in the B horizons without much buffering capacity, we assume that that's what the trend we're starting to see is a reduction in pH without chelating effects of organic matter. The benzoic acid was a little more straightforward of a story. We have, again, the A horizon soils in this graph, and this is, you know, it's a documented type of carbon that can be metabolized by microbes, so it appears that more carbon means a little more activity, a little more urea hydrolysis, and that the source of carbon as a heterotrophic carbon source may explain the trend we see in these A horizon soils. In B horizons, we had the same stimulation at the lower concentrations. At the high concentrations, this was, again, probably a pH effect in a B horizon soil where there wasn't, and benzoic acid itself is not documented as a metal chelator, so we're adding carbon, we're reducing the pH without there being a metal chelator there to help offset the negative impacts of increased aluminum in particular. So in summary, each of the carbon types that we tested had concentration-dependent effects. There were definitely thresholds at which more or less activity was seen. In the case of gallic acid and also with ascorbic acid, although I didn't show those graphs, we believe Fenton reactions were part of the story and explained why the middle ranges of carbon that in food chemistry corresponded to the most damage by these hydroxyl radicals explained that strange pattern that we saw, the concentration-dependent pattern we saw with those carbon compounds. Whereas benzoic acid was a heterotrophic carbon source, it boosted urease activity because it was a food for the microbes. And the inhibitions that we saw were probably because the pH got low and there wasn't much carbon there to offset that effect. So, with that, thank you and welcome any questions or comments you might have on the data. No questions? You mean if I had a mixture of all of them in the solution? I think that's a good question, and probably one that needs to be looked into. I would expect that it may not be as pronounced, because you'd have some, if you had a carbon source that was metabolized by microbes, you'd have a boost in activity. You might have some damage in those middle ranges, but it might depend as well on whether other carbon sources are chelating metals and offsetting that. So I think that's a good question. I don't have, that would be my suspicion, but I don't have an answer.
All right, thank you. Okay, I believe that concludes our section. Good job, everybody.